her lap, fingers threaded together. He took her glass and drank from it. She looked up, annoyed, the way she had once been annoyed when he'd pulled her hair, when they were children. It hurt him to look at her as an enemy. "I do not see that you care for my feelings any more than she does," Athene said. "But I do." He made his voice grave. "Come. Deliver your message." "My lady knows she dealt you quite a blow. She further knows that your control of the other fairies in your lands is spotty after the botched tithe."
Reuben leaned against the wall. "You even sound like her when you say it."
"Don't jest. She wants you to fight her champion. If you win, she will leave your lands unmolested for 7 years. If you lose, you will forfeit the Unseelie Court to her."
Athene looked at him with anguished eyes.
"And you will die."
Reuben barely heard her plea, he was so surprised by the Bright Queen's offer. "I cannot think but that this is either generosity or some cunning beyond my measure. Why should she give me this chance at winning when now I have near none?"
"She wants your lands hale and whole when she takes them, not weakened by a war. Too many great courts have fallen into rabble."
"Do you ever imagine no court at all?" Reuben asked his sister quietly. "No vast responsibilities or ancient grudges or endless wars?"
"We have come to rely on humans too much," said Athene, frowning. "Once, our kind lived apart from them. Now we rely on them to be everything from farmers to nursemaids. We live in their cast-off spaces and sup off their tables. If the courts fall, we will be parasites with nothing to call our own. This is the last of our old world."
"I hardly think it is as serious as all that."
Reuben looked past Athene. He didn't want her to see his expression.
"How about this? Tell Salariel that I will take her insulting and lopsided bargain with one variation. She must wager something, too. She must put up her crown."
"She will never give you,"
Reuben cut her off. "Not to me. To you."
Athene opened her mouth, but no sound came out.
"Tell her that if she loses, she makes you the Bright Queen of the Seelie Court. If I lose, I will give her both my crown and my life."
It felt good to say, even if it were a rash wager.
Athene rose.
"You mock me."
He made a dismissive gesture. "Don't be silly. You know very well that I do not."
"She told me that if you wished to bargain, you must do so with her."
She paced the room, gesturing wildly.
"Why won't you just come back to us? Pledge yourself to Salariel, ask for her forgiveness. Tell her how hard it was to be Nick Nevin's knight. She could not have known."
"Salariel has spies everywhere. I very much doubt that she was ignorant of my suffering."
"There was nothing for her to do. Nothing for any of us to do. She spoke often of her fondness for you. Let her explain. Let her be your friend again. Forgive each other."
Her voice dropped low.
"You don't belong in a place like this."
"And why is that, dear sister? Why don't I belong here?"
Athene groaned and slapped one open hand against the wall. "Because you are not a fiend!"
She reminded Reuben so much of his old, innocent self that for a moment he hated her. For a moment he only wanted to shake her and scream at her and hurt her before someone else did. "No? Is it not enough what I have done? Is it not enough to have cut the throat of a Nyx that dared laugh too loud or too long before my mistress? Is it not enough to have hunted down a hob that stole a single cake from her table? Is it not enough to have been deaf to their entreaties, their begging?"
"Nick Nevin commanded you."
"Of course she did," he shouted. "Again and again and again she commanded me. And now I am changed, Athene. This is where I belong, if I belong anywhere at all."
"What about Kay?
The pixie?"
He gave her a quick look. "You were kind to her.
Why do you want me to think the worst of you?
I was not kind to Kay, he said. Ask her. I am not kind, Athene. Moreover, I no longer have any interest in kindness. I mean to win.
If you were to win, Athene said, her voice faltering, I would be the queen, and you would be my enemy.
He snorted. Now don't go casting a pall over my best outcome. He held out the cup to her. Drink something. Eat. After all, it is natural for siblings to squabble, is it not? Athene took the cup back from him and lifted it to her mouth, but he had left her only a single swallow. Kay cradled a large Thundercat's thermos of coffee as she walked to Corny's car. Luis followed, wrapped in a black coat. It hung voluminously from his shoulders, its inner lining torn to pieces. He had taken it out of the back of one of the closets, from a pile strewn with chunks of plaster. She was glad to keep moving. As long as there was something in front of her, something still to do, things made sense. You got a map of upstate New York? Luis asked Corny. I thought you knew the way, Corny said. What kind of guide needs a map? Can you two not? Kay started, but stopped in front of a newspaper machine. There, in a sidebar on the front page of the Times, was a picture of the cemetery on the hill by Kay's house, the hill where Janet was buried. The hollow hill under which Reuben had been crowned. It had collapsed beneath the weight of an overturned truck. The photo showed smoke billowing up from the hill, fallen gravestones scattered like loose teeth. Corny slid quarters into the machine and pulled out a paper. A bunch of bodies were found, too burnt to identify. They're looking for dental matches. There was some speculation that maybe people were sledding when the truck hit. Kay, what the fuck? Kay touched the picture, running her fingers over the ink of the page. I don't know. Luis frowned. All those people. Can't the folk kill each other and leave us out of it? Shut up! Just shut up! Kay said, walking to Corny's car and jerking on the handle. Pieces of chrome came off on her singed fingers. She felt sick. I've got to unlock it, Corny said, opening the door for her with his keys. Look, he's okay. I'm sure he's okay. She threw herself into the back seat, trying not to imagine Reuben dead, trying not to see his eyes dulled with mud. No, you're not. I'm calling my mom, Corny said. He started the car while he dialed, his gloved fingers awkward. Luis pointed out the turns and Corny drove with the phone cradled against his shoulder. This time, Kay welcomed the iron sickness, welcomed the dizziness that made it hard to think. She says Janet's coffin wasn't disturbed, but the stone's gone. Corny pushed his phone closed. Nobody saw anyone sledding that late, and according to the local paper, the truck wasn't even supposed to be making deliveries in the area. It's the war, Kay said, putting her head down on the vinyl seat. The fairy war. What's wrong with her? She heard Luis ask softly. Corny's eyes stayed on the road. She was dating someone from the Unseelie Court. Luis looked back at her. Dating? Yeah, Corny said. He gave her his class ring. It was a whole big thing. Luis snorted. Reuben, Corny said. His voice sounded too loud, as though the name were echoing off the walls of the car. Kay closed her eyes, but the dread didn't ebb. That's not possible, said Luis. Why do you think Solariel wants to see me? Kay demanded. Why do you think it's worth two messengers and a guarantee of protection? If he isn't dead already, she thinks I can help kill him. No, said Luis. You can't date the Lord of the Night Court. Well, I'm not. He dumped me. You can't get dumped by the Lord of the Night Court. Oh, yes, you can. You so completely can. We're all on edge, Corny rubbed his face, and it's a bad day when I'm the voice of reason. Relax. We're going to be stuck in this traffic for a long time. They drove upstate while the late afternoon sunlight filtered through the leafless trees and the new fallen snow melted into slush. They passed strip malls hung with wreaths and garlands, while kicked-up road salt streaked tide lines onto the sides of cars. Kay looked out the window, counting silver cars, reading every sign, trying not to think. At sunset, they finally pulled onto a dirt road and Luis told them to stop.
"Here,"
he said, and opened the door. In the fading light, Kay could see an ice-covered lake stretching out from a bank just beyond the lip of the road. Mist shrouded the center of the lake from view. Dead trees rose from the water, as though there had once been a forest where the lake now stood. A forest of drowned trees. The fading light turned the trunks to gold. Wind whipped loose snow into Kay's face. It stung like chips of glass.
"There's a boat," Luis said. "Come on."
They walked downhill, shoes skidding on the ice. Corny gasped, and Kay looked up from watching her feet. A young man stood in front of her, half obscured by the branches of a fir tree. She yelped. He was as still as a statue, in a down jacket and a woolen cap. He stared past the three of them as though they weren't there. His skin was darker than Luis's, but his lips had gone pale with cold.
"Hello?"
Luis said, waving his hand in front of the guy's face. The man didn't move.
"Look,"
Corny said. He pointed through the evergreen trees to a woman in her 50s standing by herself. Her ginger hair fluttered in the slight breeze. Squinting, Kay could see other spots of color along the lake. Other humans, waiting at attention for some signal. Kay's gaze dropped to the man's chapped fingers.
"Frostbite."
"Wake up!" Luis shouted. When that got no response, he slapped the man across one cheek. The frozen man's gaze shifted suddenly. Without a trace of expression, he threw Luis to the ground and stomped on his stomach. Luis groaned in pain, rolling to his side, his body curling up defensively. Corny threw himself at the man. They fell backward, cracking through the thin ice of the lake as they splashed into the shallow water. Kay rushed forward, trying to pull Corny onto the shore. A hand closed on her arm. She turned to see a creature, as tall and thin as a scarecrow, shrouded in tattered black fabric that whipped through the air. His eyes were a dead, pupil-less white, and his teeth were clear as glass. Kay's scream died in her throat. Her nails scrabbled at the creature's arm and he let her go, pushing past. He moved so nimbly that by the time she'd turned her head, his skeletal hand was on the frozen man's throat. Corny splashed up onto the bank and collapsed in the snow. The creature pressed a thumb against the man's forehead and hissed some words that Kay didn't know. The frozen man moved slowly to resume standing like an indifferent sentry, clothing soaked through and dripping.
"What do you want?"
Kay demanded, taking off her coat and wrapping it around a shivering Corny.
"Who are you?"
"Sorrow, Sap,"
said the creature, bowing his head. His hair was thin and coiled like the tangle of roots beneath a weed.
"At your service."
"Great! That's just fucking great!"
Luis held his stomach. Corny shuddered reflexively and pulled the coat tighter.
"My service?"
Kay asked. Looking across the forest, she saw the other human figures walk back to their original positions. They had been coming. Had been perhaps only moments away from entering the fight.
"The king of the Onsili court commands that I guard your steps. I have followed you since you left his court."
"Why would he do that?"
Kay blurted. She thought of Reuben covered in collapsed dirt, his face as pale as a marble tombstone, and she closed her eyes against the image. He should have been protecting himself and been less worried about her. Sarosap tilted his head.
"I serve his whims. I need not understand them."
"But how could you stop the frozen people like that?"
Luis asked.
"This barrier has to have been created to keep you out more than us."
At the question, Sarosap smiled, his clear, wet teeth making his mouth look poisonous. He reached into a sack beneath his robes and threw down what at first seemed like green leather lined in red silk. Then Kay saw the fine hairs dotting the surface and the sticky wetness underneath. Skin. The skin of a fairy.
She told me,
said Sarosap. Luis made a noise in the back of his throat and turned away, like he was going to retch.
You can't! I don't want!
Kay said, furious and terrified.
You killed her because of me!
Sarosap said nothing.
Never do that! Never!
She walked up to him, hands fisted. Before she thought better of it, she slapped him. Her hand stung. He didn't even flinch.
Just because I am to protect you does not give you governance over me.
Kay,
Luis said stiffly.
It's done.
Kay looked toward Luis, but he avoided meeting her eyes.
I'm freezing, Corny said, as in, to death. Let's get where we're going.
All these people are going to die from the cold, Kay said, although it seemed that, lately, her trying to make things better had only succeeded in making them worse.
We can't just leave them.
Corny took out his phone.
Let's call the...
Luis shook his head.
I don't think we should lead more victims out here. That's what you'd be doing if the police came.
I'm not getting reception anyway,
Corny said.
You break curses. Can't you do anything for them?
Luis shook his head.
This is way beyond what I know how to handle.
We have to dry this guy off, Kay said. Maybe cover his fingers before they get worse. Sarosap, can you keep him... deactivated?
You have no governance over me.
Yellow Eyes watched her with as little expression as an owl's.
I didn't think I did, Kay said. I'm asking for your help.
Let them die, said Sarosap.
She sighed.
Can't you snap them out of it? Remove whatever enchantment is keeping them like this. Remove it permanently. Then they could just go home.
No, he said. I cannot.
I am going to help this guy. If he attacks me, you are going to have to stop him. And if you don't keep him turned off, he's going to attack.
Sarosap's face seemed expressionless, but one of his hands curled into a fist.
Very well, Pixie who has my king's favor.
He strode to the frozen man and placed his thumb on the man's forehead once more. Kay sat down in the snow and pulled off her own boots as Sarosap chanted the unfamiliar words. Taking off her socks, she wrapped them over the man's hands. Luis draped the guy in his coat and ducked out of the way of a swinging arm when the hissing chant faltered.
It's not going to help, Corny said. These people are screwed.
Kay stepped back. The cold felt like razors cutting her skin. Even wearing her coat, Corny's lips had gone blue. The frozen man would die with all the others.
The Sealy Court's close, Luis said.
There I cannot follow, said Sarosap. If you go, you will be without my protection, and that would cause my lord deep displeasure.
We're going, Kay said.
As you say.
Sarosap bowed his head.
I will wait for you here.
Kay looked at Corny.
You don't have to come. You'd warm up quickly in the car.
Don't be an idiot, he told her through chattering teeth. The next leg of the journey means getting into that, Luis said, pointing along the shore. For a moment, Kay saw nothing. Then the wind rippled the water, setting something to rock and glisten in the moonlight. A boat, carved entirely from ice, its prow shaped like a swan ready to soar into flight.
The bright lady didn't exactly tell me about her frozen zombie sentries, so I'm thinking she's full of surprises.
Oh, great. That'll warm us right up, Corny said, stumbling over the frozen snow. Kay stepped gingerly onto the slippery surface of the boat and sat down. The seat was cold against her thighs.
So, would this water fix Corny's curse?
Corny got in next to her.
I don't...
Corny? Luis frowned.
Neil, Kay said. I mean fix Neil's curse.
No. Luis pushed the boat hard and it slid out onto the water. Luis hopped in, making them rock wildly as he sat. He looked over at Corny, and there was something considering in his gaze.
Too still and not salt.
They didn't paddle, but a strange current propelled them across the lake, past the drowned trees. Beneath the dripping hull of the boat, the water was choked with vibrant green duckweed, as though a forest grew underneath the waves. Green and gold fish darted under the boat, visible through the ice hull. Fish had to keep swimming to breathe, Kay thought. She knew how they felt. There was nothing safe to think about, not Reuben, not her mother, not all the people slowly dying on the far shore. There was nothing to do but keep going until despair finally froze her.
"Kay, check it out," Corny said. "It's like from a book."
Through the mist, Kay saw the outline of an island filled with tall firs. As they got closer, the sky grew lighter and the air became warm. Although there was no sun, the shore was lit bright as day. Corny glanced at his watch and then held it out to show her. The digital numbers had stopped on December 21st at 6:13:52 p.m.
Bizarre.
"At least it's warmer," Kay said, rubbing his arms through the coat, hoping she could rub the chill out of him.
"That would be better news if we weren't in a boat made of ice."
"I don't know about you all," Luis said. He smiled slightly, almost like he was embarrassed. "But I can't even feel my ass anymore. Swimming might be better."
Corny laughed, but Kay couldn't smile. She was putting Corny in danger, again.
The last of the haze blew off, and Kay saw that each tree on the island was white with cocoon silk in place of snow. She thought she could see masses of caterpillars writhing at the peaks of the trees, and she shuddered. The boat dug into the soft mud. They climbed out, feet sinking slightly so there was a sucking noise with each step across the shore.
"Stupid mud," Kay thought. "Stupid boat. Stupid fairy island."
She found herself suddenly exhausted.
"Stupid, stupid me."
There was music, distant and faint, accompanied by the sound of laughter. They followed it into a grove of flowering cherry trees, the blooms blue instead of pink, petals falling like a shower of poison with every slight breeze. She thought of something the Thistle Witch had told her when she had explained to Kay that she was a changeling. The child's fey nature becomes harder and harder to conceal as it grows. In the end, they all return to fairy.
That couldn't be true. Kay didn't want it to be true.
Corny shivered once, hard, like his body was shaking off the cold, and towed off his sodden and mud-covered shoes. It was warm, but not hot, on the island. So perfect a temperature, in fact, that it was as though there were no weather at all. A few of the bright folk strolled on the grass. A boy in a skirt of silver scale mesh held the hand of a pixie with wide azure wings. Clouds of tiny buzzing fairies hovered in the air like gnats. A knight in white painted armor looked in Kay's direction. A singing voice, heartbreakingly lovely, drifted down to where she stood. From the branches of the trees, pointed faces stared down. A knight with eyes the color of turquoises walked up to meet them and bowed deeply.
"My lady is pleased by your arrival. She asks that you come and sit with her."
He glanced at her companions. "Only you." Kay nodded, worrying her lip with her teeth.
"Beneath the tree."
He gestured toward a massive willow, its drooping branches covered with struggling cocoons. Every now and again, one of the silken purses would rip open and a white bird would flutter loose and take flight. Kay made herself lift one of the heavy, leathery branches and duck underneath. Light filtered through the leaves to glimmer on the faces of Salariel and her courtiers. The Lady of the Bright Court did not sit on a throne, but rather on a collection of tapestry cushions heaped upon the ground. Other fairies were strewn about like ornaments, some of them horned, others thin as sticks and sprouting leaves where hair might have been. Salariel's hair was parted in two soft waves at her brow, the strands shining like copper, and for a moment Kay thought of the pennies that had fallen from the man's mouth in Louise's apartment. The bright lady smiled,
and she was so stunning that Kay forgot to speak, forgot to bow, forgot to do anything but stare. It hurt to look at her. Perhaps like great pain, great loveliness must be forgotten.
"Will you have something?"
asked Salariel, gesturing to bowls of fruit and pitchers of juice, their surfaces beating from the chill of the contents.
"Unless it is not to your taste."
"I'm sure it is very much to my taste." Kay bit into a white fruit. Black nectar stained her lips dark and ran over her chin. The courtiers laughed behind their long-fingered hands, and Kay wondered whom exactly she had been trying to impress. She was letting herself be baited.
"Good. Now, take off that silly glamour."
The lady turned to the fairies that lounged beside her.
"Leave us."
The assemblage rose lazily, lifting their harps and goblets, pillows and books. They made their way out from beneath the tree as haughtily as offended cats. Salariel turned on the pillows. Kay sat at the very edge of the pile of cushions and wiped the black juice from her mouth with her sleeve. She let the glamour fall from her, and when she saw her own green fingers, she was surprised by her relief at not having to hide them.
"You mislike me," Salariel said. "Not without reason."
"You tried to have me killed," Kay said.
"One of my people, any one of my people, was a small price to pay to trap the Lady of the Night Court."
"I'm not one of your people," Kay said.
"Of course you are." Salariel smiled. "You were born in these lands. You belong here."
Kay had no answer. She said nothing. She wished she did know who had birthed her and who had switched her, but she didn't want to hear it from the lady's lips. Salariel plucked a plum from one of the plates, looking up at Kay through her lashes.
"This war began before I came into the world. Once, there were little courts, each huddled together near a circle of thorn trees or beside a meadow of clover. But as time passed and our places thinned, we drew together in larger numbers. My mother won folk to her with the keen edge of her blade and her tongue. But not my father. He and his people dwelt here in the mountains, and they had no use for her or her kin, at least at first. In time, however, she fascinated even him, becoming his consort, gaining governance over his lands, and even bearing two children by him."
"Nicnevin and Salariel," Kay said. The bright lady nodded.
"Each girl as unlike the other as two of the folk could be. Nicnevin and our mother were of a kind, with their taste for blood and pain. I was as our father, content with less brutal amusements."
"Like freezing a ring of humans to death around a lake?" Kay asked her.
"I do not find that particularly diverting. Merely necessary," Salariel said. "Nicnevin killed our father when he gave a boon to a piper she preferred to torment. I am told our mother laughed when my sister explained how it had been done. But then, death was my mother's meat and drink. I served her a banquet of my grief."
The bright queen looked upward, into the wriggling shadows of the willow.
"I will not let my father's lands fall to my sister's court."
"But they don't want your lands. Your sister's dead." Salariel looked surprised for a moment. Her fist tightened around the plum.
"Yes, dead. Dead before my plan could break her. I spent all the long years of peace between our people building my strategy and biding my time. And she died before my bereavement could be sated. I will not give her court the chance to plan as I planned. I will take her lands and her people, and that will be my vengeance. It will secure the safety of all of the Bright Court. This is your home, whether you wish it or no, and your war, You must pick a side. I know of your pledge to Reuben, your declaration, and he was right to rebuff you. He went to the Unseelie court as a hostage for peace. Do you think he wants you to be tied to them as his consort would be? Do you think he wishes you to suffer as he's suffered?
Of course not, Kay snapped.
I know what it is to give up something you desire. Before Reuben left for the Unseelie court, he was my lover. Did you know that?
She frowned.
Passion made him occasionally forget his place, but oh, do I regret giving him up.
You forget his place now.
Solaria laughed suddenly.
Let me tell you a story of Reuben when he was in my court. I think of it often.
Sure, Kay said. She felt strangled by the things she could not say. She didn't believe Solaria meant anything but harm. But to let the queen know that would be foolish. And she did want to hear any story about Reuben. The way that Solaria spoke gave her hope he was still alive. Some of the tension went out of her, some of the dread.
Once there was a fox that got tangled in a thorn bush near our revels. Tiny sprites darted around, trying to free it. The fox didn't understand the fairies were being helpful. It only understood that it was in pain. It snapped at the sprites, trying to catch them in its teeth, and as it moved, the thorns dug deeper into its fur. Reuben saw the fox and went over to keep it still. He could have held its muzzle and let it twist its body deeper into the bush. He could have let go of it when it bit him. He did neither of those things. He let the fox bite his hand again and again, until the sprites freed it from the thorns.
I don't get the point of the story, Kay said. Are you saying that Reuben lets himself get hurt because he thinks he's being helpful? Or are you saying Reuben used to be good and kind, but now he's a prick?
Solaria tilted her head, brushing back a stray lock of her hair.
I am wondering if you aren't like that fox, Kay.
What? Kay stood up. I'm not the one who's hurting him.
He would have died for you at the tithe. Died for a pixie he'd met only days before. Then he refused to join me when we might have united the courts and forged a real peace, an enduring peace. Why do you think that is? Maybe because he was too busy disentangling you and yours from thorn bushes.
Maybe he didn't see it that way, Kay said, but she could feel her cheeks go hot and her wings twitch. There could still be peace, you know. If you would just stop biting his hand, he doesn't want to fight you.
Oh, come now.
Solaria smiled and sank her teeth into the plum.
I know you've seen the tapestry of me he slashed to pieces. He doesn't just want to fight me. He wants to destroy me.
The way she said destroy, it sounded pleasurable.
Do you know what happened to the fox?
Kay snorted. I'm pretty sure you're going to tell me.
It ran off, stopping only to lick its cuts, but the next morning it was caught in the bushes again, thorns buried deep in its flesh. All Reuben's pain for nothing.
What do you want me to do? Kay asked. What did you bring me here for?
To show you that I am no monster. Of course Reuben despises me. I sent him to the Unseelie court. But he can come back now. He is far too biddable to lead them. Join us. Join the Seelie court. Help me show Reuben. Once he gets past his anger, he will see that it would be best if he ceded control of his court to me.
I can't.
Kay hated that she was tempted.
I think you can. Convince him, that is. He trusts you. He gave you his name.
Solaria's expression didn't change, but something in her eyes did.
I'm not using that.
Not even for his own good? Not even for peace between our courts?
You mean make him surrender. That's not the same thing as peace.
I mean convince him to surrender the terrible burden of the Night Court,
Solerial said.
Kay, I am not so vain that I cannot appreciate that you outwitted me once, nor so foolish that I cannot understand your desire to preserve your own life. Let us be at odds no more.
Kay sank her nails into her palm, hard. I don't know, she managed to say. It was a seductive thought that the war might not go on, that everything could be so easily resolved.
Think on it. Should he no longer be the Lord of the Night Court, your pledge would be void. You would never have to complete the impossible quest. Declarations are only made to lords or ladies.
Kay wanted to say that it didn't matter, but it did. Her shoulders slumped.
Were you willing to help me? I could arrange for you to see him, even to speak with him, despite the declaration. He is on his way here now.
Solerio stood. The soft susurrations of her gown were the only sounds under the canopy of branches as she crossed to where Kay stood.
There are other ways to persuade you, but I do not like to be cruel.
Kay took a quick breath. He was alive. Now she just had to do what she'd come for. I want the human Kay, Ellen's daughter, the real me. Switch her back. If you do that, I'll think about what you said. I'll consider it. After all, it wasn't like Kay was really agreeing to anything. Not really.
Done, said Solerial, reaching out to stroke her cheek.
Her fingers were cool.
After all, you are one of mine. You had only to ask. And, of course, you will have the hospitality of the Bright Court while you consider.
Of course, Kay echoed faintly. Chapter 8
Forest, I fear you. In my ruined heart, your roaring wakens the same agony as in cathedrals when the organ moans, and from the depths I hear that I am damned.
Charles Baudelaire, Obsession.
You're a fool, Elibert said.
He looked out of place in the city, though he'd glamored himself a red pinstriped black suit and a silk tie the color of dried blood.
Because it's a trap? Reuben asked. His long wool coat whipped in the breeze from the river. The stench of iron seared his nose and throat. It must be.
Elibert turned, so that he was walking backward, facing Reuben. He gestured wildly, ignoring the people who had to veer out of his way.
Just her offer of peace is suspicious, but if she agrees to your absurd demand, then she must have some sure way of killing you.
Yes, Reuben said, grabbing his arm.
And you're about to walk into a road.
Elibert stopped, pushing back strands of wine-colored hair from his eyes. He sighed.
Can her knight beat you?
Talithane? Reuben considered that for a moment. It was hard to imagine Talithane, whom he had wrestled with in patches of clover, who had loved Athene for years before he'd found the courage to bring her a mere bundle of violets, as formidable. But those memories seemed old and unfamiliar, as if they belonged to another person. Perhaps this Talithane was another person, too.
I think I can win. The Bright Queen has a deadly weapon, then, perhaps, or armor that cannot be pierced. Some way to use iron weaponry. It could be that. I turn it over again and again in my mind, but I have no more answer than you do.
Reuben looked at his hand and saw all the throats he had cut in Nick Nevin's service, all the pleading eyes and trembling mouths, all the mercy that he could not bestow, least of all on himself. He let go of Elibert.
I only hope that I am a better murderer than the Bright Lady imagines me. Tell me that there is some plan, at least. There is some plan, Reuben said, with a twist of his mouth. Although, without knowing what Solarial intends, I know not what good it is.
You shouldn't have come Ironside yourself. In the mortal world, you are vulnerable, said Elibert, glowering.
They crossed the road next to a too-thin mortal pushing an empty stroller and another furiously punching keys on her cell phone.
Dulcamara could have accompanied me. You could have explained what we were to do and sent us off to do it. That's how a proper unseelie king behaves.
Reuben veered off the sidewalk, ducking under a torn chain-link fence that singed his fingers and snagged on the cloth of his coat. Elibert clambered over the top, jumping down with a flourish.
I'm not sure it's proper for a knight to tell a king how to behave, Reuben said. But come, indulge me a little longer. As you rightly point out, I am a fool, and I am about to make a series of very foolish bargains. The building behind the fence looked like several of the neighboring boarded-up buildings, but this one had a garden on the roof, long tendrils of winter-dead plants hanging over onto the brick sides. On the second floor, the windows were completely missing. Shadows flickered against the inner walls. Reuben paused.
I would like to say that my time in the Unseelie Court changed my nature. For a long time, it was a comfort for me to think so. Whenever I saw my sister, I would recall how I had once been like her before I was corrupted.
My lord, Elibert blanched.
I am no longer sure if that's true. I wonder if I found my nature instead where before it was hidden, even from me. So what is your nature?
Let's find out.
Reuben walked across the cracked front steps and knocked against the wood covering the door.
Will you at least tell me what we're doing here?
Elibert asked.
Visiting exiles.
Reuben put a finger to his lips. One of the boards swung open from a nearby window. An ogre stood, framed in the opening, his horns curving back from his head like a ram's and his long brown beard turning to green at the tip.
If it isn't your dark majesty, he said. I'm guessing you heard about my changeling stock. The best you're like to find, not carved from logs or sticks, but lovingly crafted from mannequins. Some with real glass eyes. Even mortals with a bit of the sight in them can't see through my work. The Bright Queen herself uses me, but I bet you knew that. Come around the back. I'm eager to make something for you.
Reuben shook his head.
I'm here to make you something. An offer. Tell me, how long have you been in exile?
Kay rested beside Corny and Louise in a bower of ivy, the soft earth and sweet breeze lulling her to dozing. Night-blooming flowers perfumed the air, dotting the dark with constellations of white petals. It's weird. Kay leaned back against the grass. It's dark now, but it was night when we got here, and it was bright then. I thought it was going to stay eternal day or something.
That is odd, said Corny.
Luis ripped open his second protein bar and bit into it with a grimace.
I don't know why she's making me stay. This is bullshit. I did everything she told me. Dave is...
He stopped.
Dave is what?
Corny asked. Luis looked at the wrapper in his hands.
Prone to getting into trouble when I'm not around to stop him.
Kay watched the petals fall. The human changeling was probably returned to Ellen by now, taking up all Kay's space in the world she knew. With one quest done and the other impossible, she had no idea what would happen next. She very much doubted the queen would just let her leave. Keeping Louise at court was both encouraging and discouraging. Encouraging because maybe Solarial would let him guide them back at some not-too-distant point. But discouraging because the Seelie Court felt like a web that thrashing would only wrap more tightly around them, like thorn bushes. Not that she had anywhere else to go. Silent Hobman brought a tray of hollowed-out acorns filled with a liquid as clear as water and placed them beside plates of little cakes. Kay had already eaten three, lifting a fourth,
She offered it to Corny.
Don't, Louise said when Corny reached for it.
What? Corny asked.
Don't eat or drink anything of theirs. It's not safe.
Music started up somewhere in the distance, and Kay heard a high voice begin to sing the tale of a nightingale who was really a princess, and a princess who was really a pack of cards.
Corny took the cake.
She wanted to put a cautioning hand on Corny's arm, but there was something brittle in his manner that made her hold back. His eyes glittered with banked fire. He laughed and dropped the confection into his mouth.
There is no safe, not for me. I don't have true sight. I can't resist their enchantments, and right now I don't see why I should bother trying.
Because not trying is stupid, Louise said.
Corny licked his fingers.
Stupid. Tastes pretty good.
A fairy woman approached, her bare feet silent on the soft earth.
For you,
she said, and placed 3 packets of clothing on the grass.
Kay reached over to touch the first one. Celery green fabric felt silky under her fingertips.
Let me guess, Corny said to Louise. We're not supposed to wear anything of theirs either. Maybe you're going to walk around naked?
Louise frowned, but Kay could see his neck go red.
Stop being a dick, she said, tossing Corny his pile of clothes.
Corny grinned as if she'd paid him a compliment. Ducking behind a bush, she pulled off her t-shirt and slid the dress over her head. She'd been wearing the same camo pants and t-shirt since she'd left Jersey, and she couldn't wait to get out of them. The fairy cloth felt as light as spider silk when she pulled it over her head, and it reminded her of the only other fairy gown she'd worn, the one she'd almost been sacrificed in, the one that had come apart in the sink when she'd tried to wash the blood out of it. Her memories of the averted tithe were still a shuddersome blur of bedazzlement and terror, and Reuben's breath tickling her neck as he'd whispered,
"What belongs to you, yet others use it more than you do."
His name. The name she'd tricked out of him without knowing its worth. The name she'd used to command him and could use still. No wonder his court didn't like her. She could make their king do her bidding.
I look ridiculous, don't I? Corny said, stepping out from the branches and causing Kay to start.
He wore a brocaded black and scarlet tunic over black pants, and his feet were bare. He frowned.
My clothes are soaked, though. At least this is dry.
Kay turned, letting the thin skirt whirl around her.
I like my dress.
Nice. All that green really brings out the pink of your eye membranes. Shut up!
Picking up a twig from the ground, she twisted up her hair with it like she'd done with pencils in school.
Where's Louise?
Corny pointed with his chin. Turning, Kay spotted him leaning against a tree, chewing on what was probably the last of the protein bar. Louise glowered as he shoved his hands deeper into the pockets of a long brown jacket, clasped with 3 buckles at his waist. Kay's damp purple coat hung from the branch of a tree.
I guess we're supposed to go to the party like this, Kay called.
Louise sauntered closer. Technically, it's more of a revel. Corny rolled his eyes.
Let's go.
Kay headed toward the music, letting her fingers run through the heavy green leaves. She plucked a great white flower down from one of the branches and pulled off one bruised petal after another.
He loves me, Corny said. He loves me not.
Kay scowled and stopped.
That's not what I was doing.
Shapes moved through the trees like ghosts. The laughter and music seemed always a little more distant until suddenly she was among a throng of fairies. Crowds of folk danced in wide and chaotic circles, or diced, or simply laughed as though the breeze had carried a joke to their ears only. One fairy woman crouched beside a pool, conversing intently with her reflection, while another stroked the bark of a tree as though it were the fur of a pet. Kay opened her mouth to tell Corny something, but stopped when her eye was caught by white hair and eyes like silver spoons. Someone threaded through the crowd, cloaked and hooded, but not hooded enough. There was only one person Kay knew with eyes like that.
I'll be right back, she said,
already weaving between a damp girl in a dress of woven river grass and a hob on crude mossy stilts.
Reuben,
she whispered, touching his shoulder. She could feel her heart speeding, and she hated it. She hated everything about how she felt at that moment. So absurdly grateful she would have liked to slap herself.
You fucker! You could have told me to go on a quest to bring you an apple from the banquet table. You could have sent me on a quest to tie a braid in your hair.
The figure drew back its hood, and Kay remembered the other person who would have eyes like Reuben's. His sister, Athene.
Kay, Athene said, I had hoped I would happen on you.
Mortified, Kay tried to smile, but it came out as more of a grimace. She couldn't believe she had just blurted things she wasn't sure, in retrospect, that she wanted even Reuben to hear.
I have only a moment, Athene said. I must bring the Queen a message, but there is something I would know. About my brother.
Kay shrugged. We're not exactly speaking.
He was never cruel when we were children. Now he is brutal and cold and terrible. He will make war on us whom he loved.
It startled Kay to think of Reuben as a child. You grew up in Faerie?
I don't have time for...
Make time. I want to know. Athene looked at Kay for a long moment, then sighed.
Reuben and I were brought up in Faerie by a human midwife. She'd been stolen away from her own children and would call us by their names, Mary and Robert. I misliked that. Otherwise, she was very kind.
What about your parents? Do you know them? Love them?
Answer my question, if you please, Athene said. My lady wants him to duel instead of lead the Unseelie Court into battle. It would prevent a war, which the Unseelie Court is too depleted to win, but it would mean his death.
Your lady is a bitch, Kay said before she thought better of it. Athene wrung her hands, fingers sliding over one another.
No. She would accept him back. I know she would if he were only to ask her. Why won't he ask her?
I don't know, Kay said.
You must discern something. He has a fondness for you.
Kay started to protest, but Athene cut her off.
I heard the way you spoke to me when you supposed me to be him. You speak to him as to a friend.
Kay shook her head. Look, I did this declaration thing where you get a quest. He pretty much told me to fuck off. Whatever you think I know about him or can tell you about him, I just don't think I can.
I saw you, although I didn't hear the words. I was in the hill that night.
Athene smiled, but her brow furrowed slightly, as though she were puzzling through Kay's human phrasings.
Still, one must assume the quest was not an apple from a banquet table, nor a braid in his hair.
Kay blushed.
If you thought the king of the Unseelie Court would give you so simple a quest, you must think him besotted.
Why wouldn't he? He said that I... Kay stopped, realizing that she shouldn't repeat his words.
You are the only thing I want.
It wasn't safe to say that to Athene, no matter what had happened.
A declaration is very serious.
But I thought it was, like, letting everyone know we were together.
It is far more immutable than that. There is only ever a single consort, and more often there is none. It joins you both to him and to his court. My brother declared himself once, you know.
Too solarial, Kay said, although she hadn't known, not really, not before right then. She remembered Solarial standing in the middle of a human orchard and telling Reuben that he'd proved his love to her satisfaction. How angry Solarial had been when he turned away.
He finished his quest, didn't he?
Yes, Athene said.
He was to stay at the Unseelie Court as Nicknevin's sworn knight, until the end of the truce. Nicknevin's death ended it. He could be the Bright Lady's consort now if he wanted, if he returned to us. A declaration is a compact, and he has fulfilled his side of the bargain.
Kay looked around at the revelers and felt small and stupid. You think they should be together, don't you? You wonder what he saw in me, some dirty pixie with bad manners.
You're clever.
The fairy woman did not meet Kay's gaze.
I imagine he saw that.
Kay looked down at the scuffed tops of her boots. Not that clever after all. Athene looked thoughtful.
In my heart, I believe that he loves Solariel. He blames her for his pain, but my lady, she did not intend for him to suffer so.
He doesn't believe that. At best, he thinks she didn't care, and I think he very much wanted her to care.
What quest did he send you on?
Kay frowned and tried to keep her voice even. He told me to bring him a fairy that can tell an untruth. It hurt to repeat it. The words a reproach for her thinking he liked her enough to put feelings above appearances.
An impossible task, Athene said, still considering.
So you see, Kay said, I'm probably not the best person to answer your questions. I very much wanted him to care, too. And he didn't.
If he doesn't care for you, for her, or for me, Athene said, then there is no one else I can think of whom he cares for, save himself.
A blonde knight strode toward them, his green armor making his body nearly disappear into the leaves.
I really do have to go, Athene said, turning away.
He doesn't care about himself, Kay called after her. I don't think he's cared about himself for a long time. Corny strolled through the woods, trying to ignore how his heart hammered against his chest. He tried not to make eye contact with any fairies, but he was drawn to their cat's faces, their long noses and bright eyes. Louisa's scowl was fixed, no matter what they passed. Even a river full of nixes, cabochons of water beating on their bare skin, did not move him, while it was all Corny could do to look away. "What do you see?" Corny asked finally, when the silence between them had stretched so long that he'd given up on Louisa's speaking first. Are they beautiful? Is it all illusion?
They're not exactly beautiful, but they're dazzling. Louise snorted. It sucks when you think of it. They have forever, and what do? Spend all their time eating and fucking and figuring out complicated ways to kill each other.
Corny shrugged.
I probably would too. I can see myself with bag after bag of Cheetos, downloading porn and playing Avenging Souls for weeks straight if I was immortal.
Louise looked at Corny for a long moment. Bullshit, he said. Corny snorted.
Shows what you know.
Remember that cake you ate before? Said Louise. All I saw was an old mushroom. For a moment, Corny thought he was joking.
But Kay ate one. She ate, like, three, Louise said with such glee that Corny started to laugh, and then they were both laughing together, as easy and silly as if they were going to be friends.
Corny stopped laughing when he realized that he wanted them to be friends.
How come you hate the folk?
Louise turned so that his cloudy eye was too Corny, making it hard for Corny to read his expression.
I've had the sight since I was a little kid. My dad had it, and I guess it got passed down to me. It made him crazy, or maybe they did.
Louise shook his head wearily, as though he were already tired of the story.
When they know you can see them, they fuck with you in other ways. Anyway, my dad got the idea in his head that no one was safe. He shot my mother and my brother. I think he was trying to protect them. If I had been there, he would have shot me too. My brother made it, barely. And I had to put myself in debt to a fairy to get him better. Can you imagine how things would be without the fae? I can. Normal. I should tell you, one of them, a kelpie, killed my sister, Corny said. He drowned her in the ocean about 2 months ago. And Neff Mael, he did stuff to me, but I still wanted...
His words trailed off as he realized that maybe it wasn't okay for him to talk about a guy that way, in front of Louise.
What did you want?
In the clearing ahead, Corny spotted a group of fairies tossing what looked like dice into a large bowl. They were lovely or hideous, or both at once. One golden-haired head looked uncomfortably familiar. Adair.
We have to go, he whispered to Louise, before he spots us.
Louise took a quick look over his shoulder as they walked faster and faster.
Which one? What did he do?
cursed me.
Corny nodded as they ducked under the curtain of a weeping willow. Neither mentioned that Salariel had promised